morning, everyone. It is Monday, July 24th, 2017, and this is it. This is the week that Green Bay Packers training camp gets underway. The long wait is over for everyone that wanted to see some football, wanted to hear about some football. You're finally going to get a chance to do so. The Packers hit the field later this week, and before you know it, that regular season is going to be here. My name is Michael Cohen, and this is the Packers Podcast. We thank you for tuning in to our new format here, which is every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday morning in your inbox, on your iPhone, on your computer, by 6 a.m. every day, a 15-minute podcast giving you the news, the updates, the injuries, whatever you want to know from the day before. We've got you covered Monday through Friday. So be sure to tune in, subscribe, do whatever you got to do, because we're going to give you 5 podcasts a week, Monday through Friday, and we hope you'll enjoy them. Now, my first podcast that we did on Friday to get this series going, we talked a little bit about some storylines that I'm interested in right off the bat when training camp begins. And today we're going to look at something else that I'm also kind of... It's one of the unique things about training camp. It's getting a look at all these undrafted guys, right? Because it's sort of like a tease during OTAs and minicamp. All these undrafted guys come in, and the first thing you wonder is, all right, which one of these guys can play? Which one of these guys can make a push for a roster spot? But then you realize that OTAs, there's no pads, and minicamp, there's no pads. And as any of these coaches on the staff will tell you, a player that looks unbelievable in shells can look terrible in pads, and a guy that looks lost in shells can look great in pads. So it really makes no difference what happened in the spring, and all that matters now is how they look with the pads on, who can hit, who can tackle, all these things that make football what it is. So I picked out 5 undrafted guys that I'm really interested in seeing for different reasons. The first one on the list is Jonathan Calvin. He's an outside linebacker from Mississippi State. And the reason I'm really interested in him is because he is the one outside linebacker on the roster right now that fits the size model of a Dayton Jones or a Julius Peppers. Now, why is that important? If you think about Dayton Jones and Julius Peppers, not only did they play outside linebacker, but they also had an opportunity to put their hand on the ground and rush from the inside, meaning as the defensive lineman, on nickel and dime situations. So they would go from being one of those outside backers who stands up and rushes the passer to a guy that's playing with his hand down on the interior, going against bigger, you know, guards, centers, you know, the meat of that offensive line. Now, without those two guys, you think about who's left. You think about Clay Matthews. You think about Nick Perry, Kyler Fackrell, Jayrone Elliott. These are guys that are your pure pass rushers, your athletic guys on the outside. The Packers don't really have anyone anymore that is big enough to do both and athletic enough to do both. And Calvin could be that guy. He's listed at 6'3", 266. Now, obviously, Peppers was about 270 and Dayton was about 270 as well. Both those guys actually might have pushed 275. But 6'3", 266, you know, that's about 15 pounds heavier than, you know, guys like Nick Perry and Clay Matthews, things like that, 10 to 15 pounds heavier. And that's a significant, you know, amount of weight. When you're talking about going against offensive linemen that are 300 and something pounds, you're automatically going to be giving up some size. So any extra weight that you can have, any extra strength on the inside can be big. In addition to that, Calvin has had an opportunity to play both of those roles before. When he was at Mississippi State, he played a bunch of different positions. He played as a 4-3 defensive end. He played as a 3-4 outside linebacker, and he also played as an interior rusher. So I think he has a chance to, you know, I don't want to say win a job, because I don't think that's an accurate statement. You know, there's a lot that's going to go into it more than just positional versatility. But I think that he has an opportunity to differentiate himself in this regard, because there aren't a lot of other guys, if any, at that outside linebacker position that can play the dual roles that he might be able to play. So it's not going to win him a rostered spot necessarily, unless he, you know, really plays well and can show that he can play multiple positions at a high level. But I do think it's something that can catch the coach's attention, because it will differentiate him from some of the other guys at that position. The next guy I'm interested in is somebody that we haven't even really seen at all yet, and this is Michael Clark. Clark was a former basketball player who then went to Marshall and played football, and began as a wide receiver. He is listed at 6'6", 217 pounds. Now, let me repeat that. A wide receiver at 6'6", 217. Now, that's what the Packers list him as. Now, I'm sure you've heard Bob and I tell you that a lot of times those rosters are inflated a little bit, just like, you know, college basketball rosters. Anytime you see a point guard that's 6 feet tall, there is no way that point guard is 6 feet tall. That's code for 5'10", 5'11", and we just don't want to say he's under 6 feet. But you look at Clark's official measurements, you know, ones from his pro day, 6'5 and a half, 215, 4'5'3 in the 40-yard dash, vertical leap of 33 inches. I mean, this guy is an athlete. There's no question about it. Now, the reason we haven't seen him is because he was injured in OTAs and minicamp, and I don't think he did anything. You know, we saw him on the sidelines a bunch. We saw him with the rehab group and things like that. But he didn't get on the field, and we didn't get a chance to see what, if anything, he can do with that massive frame. And one of the reasons why I'm intrigued with him is because he was injured, as I mentioned, all through OTAs and minicamp, and he's still here. Why is that significant? Well, if you think about a lot of these undrafted guys, if the Packers know that it's a guy that's probably not going to materialize or doesn't have a chance at making the roster, maybe it was more of, you know, that quote-unquote training camp body that you hear, a guy that just gets you to the 90-man roster. A lot of times when guys have injuries that are going to keep them out for that much time, all of OTAs, all of minicamp, the Packers just release them. They waive them injured, they find a settlement, whatever the case may be, and they move on. But the fact that Clark missed that much time and they kept him around makes me think that they're at least intrigued enough to see what this guy can do. Because how often do you find a wide receiver that's 6'5 and a half, 215 pounds, can run the 40 in 4.53 seconds, which, to be fair, is faster than Davante Adams' 40 time coming out of Fresno State, and within 2/100ths of a second of Jordy Nelson's 40 time coming out of Kansas State? I mean, those are traits you just don't see. And so for a team to keep him around, despite the fact that he missed what amounts to 5 or 6 weeks, to keep him around, an undrafted guy, a guy that doesn't have a whole lot of football experience, to me that suggests that they see enough to where they're at least intrigued, and they want to give this guy the benefit of the doubt and say, okay, we'll give you a couple games in training camp. We'll give you a few weeks of practice once you're healthy. And let's see what you can do, because, like I said, those traits do not come around often. Next on my list is cornerback Lenzie Pipkins from Oklahoma State. Pipkins is an interesting guy. You know, he came to OTAs and minicamp, and right away he had some real problems with Joe Witt Jr., the cornerback's coach. And I don't mean behavioral problems, anything like that. I just mean that as they were going through their reps, as they were getting their work through, every time Pipkins seemed to go through the line, Joe Witt was on him really, really hard for not doing things correctly, for using the wrong technique, for playing the position in a way that is not the way the Packers typically teach their corners to play. And I remember that Pipkins would come off the field sometimes and even be a little bit confused because he was getting yelled at for something that maybe he wasn't accustomed to or whatever the case may be. And so right then and there, I thought, okay, maybe this guy isn't going to work out if he can't really get what Joe Witt is saying, if he can't really grasp the techniques and the things that they're teaching, maybe that's going to be a little bit of a struggle for him. Flash forward toward the end of OTAs and the beginning of minicamp, and I remember multiple reps in which Pipkins got a ton of praise from Joe Witt Jr. for doing things right, for playing the technique properly, for, you know, shading his guy in the proper direction, for, you know, fighting properly at the line of scrimmage with their hands and things like that. And so to me, that was pretty impressive, because for an undrafted rookie to come in and not have a good beginning, that would mess with my confidence so much if I was in that position. I just think that if you're already nervous, or you might be nervous about your ability to make it in the NFL because you're an undrafted guy, you're coming into a team that has a lot of corners, young corners already, and your first couple days don't go so well, to bounce back to the point where Witt is giving you tons of praise in just 4 or 5 weeks, I was impressed with that. I don't know if it'll carry over into training camp, but I thought it was a nice turnaround for Pipkins. Next on my list is Aaron Peck, a tight end from Fresno State. The first interesting thing about Peck is that he was actually really young in his Fresno State career when Davante Adams and Derek Carr were still on campus. You know, they overlapped for a period of time there. And so he got a chance to see what you need to do to be an NFL caliber receiver, to be an NFL caliber quarterback. And then he also got to see what that chemistry is like between quarterback and receiver and the types of things that you want to do at the next level. You know, Peck was actually a wide receiver himself. He played 5 years of wide receiver at Fresno State, finished his career with 92 catches, 1,206 yards, and 6 touchdowns. The numbers aren't going to overwhelm you, you know, and that's why he was an undrafted free agent. The Packers have decided to switch him to tight end. So he's 6'2 and a half, 239 pounds, and he ran a 4.68. It's not going to blow your doors off, but it's a decent time. It's a respectable time for a tight end. He's got a really impressive vertical leap of 36 and a half, and he's pretty strong. 22 reps on the bench press, not bad at all. Smart guy, too. Wunderlich of 31. So I'm just kind of interested to see what this guy can do when you change positions. Of course, he's not going to be a great inline blocker. That's not something he's done a whole lot of. He's going to have to learn all the technique, learn all the footwork, learn the leverage concepts, all these different things that other tight ends have been doing for a long time. But where's Peck's advantage? Peck's advantage, obviously, is in the receiving game. That's what he's done his whole life, his whole college career. It's what he's used to. So I'm just picturing a guy that's 6'2 and a half, 239 pounds, I see him in the slot. You know, this is just mentally in my head. I see him in the slot running a lot of the same routes that we saw Lance Kendricks run during OTAs, which are your crossing routes, you know, your quick outs, maybe a slant over the middle, maybe something up the seam so he can use his athleticism. You know, this is a guy that has a different set of training when it comes to footwork, agility, releases off the line of scrimmage. He was learning all those things as a wide receiver, not as a tight end. Does he have things to learn as a tight end? Absolutely. But he might be a little bit more advanced in terms of awareness to the football, ability to deal with guys in close quarters in terms of, you know, trying to break free at the line of scrimmage when it comes to jams and press techniques and things like that. So I just think he has an interesting skill set, and I always wonder how these guys adapt when they go from receiver to tight end or tight end to receiver. And how could I have a podcast about undrafted free agents and not talk about Justin Vogel, the punter? This to me is a fascinating situation because whenever we talk to punters and kickers, especially the young guys that are in training camp, or maybe they, you know, get signed late in the year, or maybe there's, you know, somebody coming in because of an injury, whatever the case may be, the first thing they talk about is how punters and kickers, those are two of the hardest jobs in the league to get. And the reason for that is mathematical. You know, there's 32 teams in the league, which means 32 punters and 32 kickers. You know, last time I checked, I haven't seen any team that has a depth chart of kickers with 1 through 3 or 1 through 4, the way you're going to see for a quarterback, you know, or running back, whatever the case may be, whatever other position, you know, you want to talk about. And so you put those numbers together, and there's 64 jobs, essentially, around the league. And so that's by far the smallest number of any position on the roster, except maybe fullback. But that's kind of a unique one and a little bit different depending on offense to offense. So here's this guy, Justin Vogel. He goes undrafted, which is rare these days because there tends to be at least one punter drafted now every year. We've seen that of late. And so he goes undrafted, and yet he walks into a situation where within a week or two of getting here, he essentially is the starting punter. Ted Thompson makes the decision to release Jacob Shum, and Justin Vogel is handed the keys to the car. Does that mean he's going to be the starting punter in week one? Absolutely not. But what Ted Thompson has said to him essentially is, it's your job to lose. You go out there and kick the way we think you can kick. Well, this job is yours. You're our starting punter. Let's wrap it up and we're ready to go. Let's roll into Lambeau Field where we'll play the Seahawks and you'll do the punting for us. Now, if he struggles, if he can't handle the directional instructions that they want him to do in terms of hang time, you know, distance between the sideline and the hash marks, all these different things that Jacob Shum and Tim Mastay have learned over the last bunch of years, then I think there'll be a move similar to last year where Ted Thompson looks around at the end of training camp, he sees what's out there, he sees who's going to be cut, and he goes with another option. But for now, Justin Vogel was handed an extremely rare opportunity. Only 64 of these jobs in the league, and guys have to fight and fight and fight to get them, because if you're a kicker or a punter, you can stick around for 15 years, so there's not a lot of turnover. And he's essentially handed a job and says, if you do what we think you can do, it's yours. That's pretty cool. So I'm interested to see how he handles that pressure and how he performs. We haven't seen a whole lot of him yet. So there you have it. Those are the five undrafted guys that caught my attention early in OTAs, and those are guys that I want to see in training camp. I'm sure there's going to be more. I'm sure I'm going to be talking about it as time goes on. But for now, those are the five I'm looking at. As always, we thank you for tuning in to the Packers Podcast. My name is Michael Cohen. I'll see you tomorrow.